time for The Outspoken Cyclist, the weekly conversation about cycles, cyclists, travel, trails, advocacy, the bike industry, and much, much more. WJCU broadcasts and streams The Outspoken Cyclist on-air show at 8 a.m. every Saturday morning. In Northeast Ohio, tune in to 88.7 FM, or worldwide, listen in at wjcu.org. Our weekly podcast is available at the close of the on-air show at outspokencyclist.com, or download it with your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for May 22nd, 2021. Did you bike to work yesterday? I didn't because I live and work in the same place, but it was bike to work day all over the U.S., and I hope that you were able to participate. And while you're out there on the road, I'm certain that safety is at the top of your list of concerns, and road safety has become a global thing. This week, Dr. Etienne Krug, director of the Department of Social Determinants of Health at the World Health Organization, joins me to talk about the UN Global Road Safety Week. It's not only a thing, it's a big thing. Every day, 3,000 children and young people are killed or seriously injured on the world's roads. It's a statistic that is both staggering and sobering. Dr. Krug and I will talk about that and a lot more in a moment. Then after our break, I talk with Jim Langley. His name and his work in cycling go back decades. If you receive the Road Bike Rider newsletter every Thursday, or if you watch his YouTube channel to learn things such as how to build wheels, or any of a number of other things that he's involved in cycling, you know who I mean. And last week, Jim completed one of his longtime goals, riding 10,000 consecutive days. I thought that unto itself was impressive enough to chat with him, but the conversation is a whole lot more. Jim will be with me in the second half of the show. The hashtag is Love30, and its meaning could be the difference between losing thousands of children's lives every year, worldwide, from street crashes, and saving them. But Love30 means a whole lot more than that. And Dr. Etienne Krug, the director of the Department of Social Determinants of Health at the World Health Organization in Geneva, Switzerland, joins me today to talk about Global Safety Week and a lot more. Hello, Dr. Krug. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, and thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Hi, Diane. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, I'm so excited about this, and it's new to me. It isn't new to the world, but the initiative for UN Global Road Safety Week, which means a lot to cyclists because we know how cyclists are killed on the road all the time, but it's not just about that. So I'd like to know a little bit about you and your background. You have a pretty storied background.
A storied background, I don't know, but yeah, I'm a medical doctor from Belgium, working now with the World Health Organization in Geneva, Switzerland, where I'm the head of the Social Determinants Department, which covers also issues like road safety and violence against children and so on. I am coming with a lot of international baggage. I work with Doctors Without Borders in Africa, in Central America, with the High Commissioner for Human Rights. And I spent some time in the US at the CDC in Atlanta. And last point, I'm a cyclist.
Well, one of the most important points.
I should have started with that one, maybe. Yeah.
No, not necessarily.
The rest doesn't count.
It counts a lot to me, and it counts to my listeners. So let's talk a little bit about the issues, in addition to Global Safety Week, the initiative we're going to talk about what the organization addresses, this Department of Social Determinants at the World Health Organization.
Yeah, well, I'll focus on road safety. I mean, we work on the big determinants of health. So what are these outside factors that influence health, like, you know, poverty or inequality, gender inequality or income inequality, those kind of things. But we also work on some specific areas, as I said, and one of them is road safety. And that's why we are keen to talk to you because our role really is to, first of all, put the issue higher on the agenda. We've been working for now more than 20 years. I've been advocating for more attention to road safety because when I joined the World Health Organization, arriving from the US CDC, I saw the director general at the time and said, look, we're doing nothing on road safety and this is killing more than 1 million people. We cannot work on vaccinating our children and treating them from diarrhea and infectious diseases to let them then die on the road because this is one of the leading killers of young people. And that's how a department got created on road safety. And so we help countries collect better data. We help countries improve their trauma care and we help countries focus on prevention, good laws, enforcement, better infrastructure and vehicles, those kind of things.
Well, all really important things. And this initiative is new to me, this Global Safety Week. We are actually in the middle of it. It was May 17th through the 23rd. So when this airs, which will be tomorrow, it'll be the 22nd. But I don't think it needs to end with a week, you know, of road safety. So tell us what the initiative is supposed to achieve and what we're trying to bring to people's attention. It's got a hashtag of Love30.
Yeah, this is the sixth global United Nations Road Safety Week in which we are now. And we've created these weeks as an opportunity to advocate for road safety in general, but also for a specific subtopic. And this year we have picked speed because it's such an important component and an important risk and contributor to death and injury and disability. And more specifically than speed, we have a big focus now on speed in urban areas. And as you say, our hashtag is Love30, calling for basically a 30 kilometer per hour speed limit around the world in urban areas, those places where traffic mixes, where we have cars mixing with bicycles, with pedestrians, etc., which are high risk places. And so Love30 kilometer is the equivalent of 20 is plenty, 20 miles per hour for you in the U.S.
20 is plenty. Let me take a moment to reintroduce you. We are speaking with Dr. Etienne Krug. He is the director of, and this is an interesting title, the director of the Department of Social Determinants at the World Health Organization. And we are actually talking to him at the World Health Organization in Geneva, Switzerland. And I really appreciate him taking time to talk with us today. So what's the 2020 Stockholm Declaration?
You know, to get action on road safety, the biggest challenge really is for decision makers, politicians, to recognize that it's something can be done about it. It's important enough for them to do it and to take action. And that's not easy because they have so many competing priorities, because putting in new laws to restrict speed or drinking and driving and stuff is not always popular immediately. And so we want to create political will. And that's why we have organized global conferences of ministers of transport or infrastructure, those who are in charge of road safety. You have global conferences for ministers of health, the World Health Assembly. You have global conferences for ministers of education, but you don't have for the ministers in charge of road safety. So we created, the first one was in Russia in 2010. We had one in Brazil 2015. And the last one was just before the pandemic broke out in February 2020. And there in Stockholm, we adopted the Stockholm Declaration, which is an agenda for the next 10 years or so for road safety. It calls upon what needs to be done, and it also innovates. For example, you know, we know what needs to be done. We know we need good laws and enforcement. We know we need good infrastructure with bicycle lanes and sidewalks. We know we need good trauma care and good data collection. But we're adding to that new elements, such as, and that's probably the most provocative one, but I think for me, the most important one is to move away from a car-based transportation system.
Yes.
Not every move needs to be done by car. There are many other ways, as you know, to move around. And we have to make those ways safe because they're healthier. It's much healthier to cycle and to walk than to sit behind a wheel because it makes us move, because it doesn't pollute, And it's better for our brains, for our mental health. And so we are promoting more and more new ways of, well, new, it's actually the most ancient ways of transportation, which are the healthiest one, and move away from that system which we have created, which is based only on the car.
So I have a question based on the fact that we are struggling right now to get a new infrastructure package through Congress, and it's trillions of dollars. And not a lot of it is being focused on non-car related issues. What do you think, and you're at sort of this global level, which makes a lot more sense to me. What do you think it will take for us to get the transportation secretary, who's all pro biking and walking and public transit, to get people to listen and find out that health and climate and all of those things have a lot to do with driving and not, you know, walking and riding?
I think it's the joint realization by different secretaries. You know, health needs to also talk to the transport secretary, and the environment people need to talk to him as well to say, look, there is no way if you continue to have traffic jams all over the country, if you continue to promote the car above these more sustainable ways of transport, that the future will be good. I mean, we've seen them less now because of COVID, but remember the huge traffic jams. I used to live in Atlanta. I mean, there you could spend 2 hours on a commute to work and in a day, and that contributed to pollution and nuisance and mental health problems and so on. So I think one thing is this collaboration across sectors. The other one is just see the examples. Look around. Cities are moving. Cities around the world are taking the opportunity that COVID has given. And I hate to use that word because, of course, it's been a horrible pandemic. But still, some opportunities have come. For example, redesigning cities so that walking and cycling has become much easier. I've seen it here in Geneva. You see it in Paris. You see it in London. You see it in so many cities around the world. Bogota in Colombia is another example where they have taken the opportunity to redesign their cities to make space for bicycling, and not only space for bicycling, but space for safe bicycling.
Well, and there brings us back to this speed problem in the cities of slowing down, you know, the complete streets. We're going through a road diet on one of our streets in our local community right now. And I'm wondering what we can do as listeners to this conversation you and I are having about International Global Safety Week. What can we do as just individuals to talk to our planners, our legislators? I mean, you're on a global level, we're on a local level. How do we bring it all together?
Well, thanks so much for asking me that question, because people can do so much. It's true. I mean, it's harder maybe to reach the transportation secretary, but it's not so hard to reach the local mayor or the local council and demand that a more reasonable speed limit is introduced in the US. That should be 20 miles per hour in urban centers or in any place where you can see pedestrians and cyclists and cars having to mix. You can demand safer infrastructure. You can demand that just anything be done to promote walking, cycling, and public transport, at least at the local level. And we've seen very many examples like that where it started just in one place, in a village or in a town, where then policymakers realized, other policymakers in other places said, oh yeah, actually, I've been to that place and it was very nice to see people walk and cycle in safety. And, you know, the air was of better quality. There was less noise. People seemed happy and the business didn't suffer. I'm from Brussels. You know, in Brussels, they introduced this 30 kilometer per hour or 20 miles per hour speed limit 2 years ago or so. And there was a big campaign in favor, but also a big campaign against, because they said, oh, the businesses will suffer. Nobody will want to go to the stores anymore because they can't park their car in front of the store. It's not true. The opposite came true, because people enjoyed walking in the city center because there are no cars, there is less noise, there is less pollution, and it's safe, and the kids can run around, and the dog can run around, and everybody is much happier. So I think people can take the opportunity of Road Safety Week. And by the way, Road Safety Week is just the beginning of a campaign. So it's not only this week, but, you know, in the coming weeks and months, to demand that cities be redesigned, that local planners and local policymakers take some useful decisions. And we've seen it in New York, frankly. It wasn't that costly. You know, with some pots of paint, you can paint bicycle lanes, you put some flower pots to protect the bicycles, and it's the beginning of a transformation. Of course, you have to go further little by little, but in the beginning, it's very doable, very quickly, very cheaply.
All agreed. And I'm really excited to hear your thinking at this level when we're down here talking about it all the time on this show and talking to people who are influential in some ways. But I think when somebody who's at this World Health Organization level, this global overview, I don't know, will you have an opportunity to talk to people like the Secretaries of Transportation and Health and Human Services? Are you actually doing any of that?
We do. Of course, we need to have, we travel less these days, and I still need to meet the new secretaries. But I have talked to the previous secretaries, maybe not the very previous, but the ones before, about such things. And there has been good receptivity also at the NHTSA, the NHTSA administrators, and so on. I've known them for more than 20 years. And we've had great collaboration in the US and great collaboration with ministers around the world. So this is part of our role, and we will certainly do that again.
I really appreciate you talking with me, because listening to you, you know, just reaffirms all of the things that we talk about on the show. And when we talk to planners and we talk about slowing down traffic, we know that it actually, by the way, creating bicycle lanes also creates jobs. You know, a lot of people don't see that. Yeah. You actually probably create more jobs in some ways. Well, we've been speaking with Dr. Etienne Krug. He is the director of the Department of Social Determinants at the World Health Organization. I hope I get to talk to you again. It's just been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for what you're doing. I mean, again, as I said in the beginning, I'm a cyclist. So when I saw your request, I said, yeah, of course I'm going to do this, because I want to promote cycling. I want to promote walking all over the world. And having lived in the US, I know it's very much needed there. So please keep pushing and let us know how we can help you.
One question. What kind of bike are you riding?
An electric bike.
Good for you.
I have a, if I cycle to work one way on the normal bike, it takes me an hour. On my electric bike, it takes me 45 minutes. So it saves me half an hour. And I still have 1.5 hours of biking every day. And it's quite hilly here in Switzerland, as you might know. So. I appreciate the help.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day. Okay.
And you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Etienne Krug joined me from his office at the World Health Organization in Geneva, Switzerland. If you'd like to know more about the Global Safety Initiative, sign the open letter, or get involved in a more substantive way, you can log on to unroadsafetyweek.org. So let's take a break, and when we return, we'll speak with the bicycle aficionado, Jim Langley. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
A bicycle crash is not an accident. And when you find yourself in a situation that calls for experienced, effective, and positive legal support and advocacy, you can depend on any of North America's independent bike law members. Bike Law's cycling attorneys are members of our community, committed to the pursuit of cycling safety and justice. For more information about Bike Law, log on to bikelaw.com. They're on your left, protecting your rights. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. He's the tech editor for Road Bike Rider, a weekly email that covers so many areas of road biking. He also has an extensive website, jimlangley.net, and a trending YouTube channel. But the cherry on the sundae was last week when he completed his 10,000th consecutive day of riding. Yep, you heard it right, 10,000 days. So I had to talk with him about that and a whole lot more. Hi, Jim. Welcome back to the Outspoken Cyclist. It's been a long time since we caught up. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. Congratulations. That's the first thing I want to do. It has to be a world record. You've ridden 10,000 consecutive days. And the last time we talked, which was like 5 or 6 years ago, I don't even remember how many days it was. And I was amazed at that. So tell me about the history of this and what constitutes one of your quote-unquote daily rides.
Well, so it goes back to, I was working at Bicycling Magazine. It was, that's kind of a long story, so I'll.
That's okay.
I started in the early 90s. So I started in 1990, and I was working at Bicycling Magazine, and I was around some super inspirational cyclists, and some of the editors at the magazine were doing some amazing things, setting world records. And, you know, I've raced a lot. I've been an athlete my whole life, and I pretty much know that I'm never going to be a world champion or win against a top pro cyclist. And I decided there has to be something I can do. And in high school, we used to try to see how many days we could run in a row. Runners are the ones that set the standard for streak. They call it streaking when you do something every day in a row. And the runners, they actually have an organization that keeps track, and they have world record holders. And the current world record holder is Ron Hill, who was a British marathoner. So he's a fantastic runner to begin with. And he actually ran for 52 years every
okay,
day.
Okay, that's crazy.
So that's amazing. So he is a world record holder. I'm not a world record holder. I'm just a schmuck who can do something every day for a long time. And I love cycling, and so that's what I picked, and I stuck with it. So when you talked to me the last time, I'd gone about 20 years, and now I'm at 27 years and about 4 months. That's 10,000 days, which is a big one for all people who streak.
Wait. So you're telling me this is not a world record?
Well, I don't know. I haven't been able to track down anybody that keeps track of cycling. The runners organizations keep track of running, but I haven't been able to track down anybody. And I would be surprised if somebody hasn't ridden their bicycle more days than I have in a row. But I haven't been able to run into that person. I have a page on my website where I ask people to email me and let me know if they just other people that are doing these things. Some interesting things. I mean, there's a guy, Dale Webster, who's surfed every day for 14,000 plus days. Say, and he is in the Guinness World Book of Records for the most number of days surfing, which is pretty crazy if you think about it, because you have to have an ocean to surf.
Right.
He couldn't go anywhere without an ocean.
You need waves too.
Yeah, and he would have to wait out there, and he had to catch his requirement was 3 waves a day. My requirement is, this was an agreement with myself. I said, let's see how many days you could go, and I didn't tell anybody about it for about 3 years. I just wanted to see what I could do, and my requirement is it has to be about an hour. I have to suit up. I have to go for a real ride. It wouldn't count if I just went over to the store and bought a quart of milk and rode home. Or if I rode around the neighborhood or something, I have to go for a real ride to me. I get to decide what a real ride is. But a real ride means that you go for a ride. You don't have to push yourself hard. You don't have to go climb a mountain, but you have to get in about an hour. You have to break a sweat. You have to ride like a workout, something that's healthy and makes you feel like you went for a ride.
So did you ever get sick? Did you ever get a cold? Did you ever get, like, you know, the flu?
So I have gotten sick. I had hernia surgery. I've had a lot of problems with my knees recently. I think I wore them out.
Sounds
but you
like
just
it.
Keep going. You find ways to make it work. And I would say that you're sick less often if you're active every day, that you just feel better most of the time. I've had days where I didn't want to ride, and always I can say when you get done with the ride, you feel like I'm glad I took the ride.
Right. Sure.
Yeah. And I want to make it clear too. A lot of people assume that a ride means I have to go out and ride outside. No, I don't. I will ride inside. Sometimes you have to ride inside. It's 3 a.m. and that's the only time in the day you can ride, or you're in a hotel in Las Vegas and you're at the bike show and you have to be on the floor early. So I take a trainer with me when I travel. If I need it, I'll use it. I have a folding bike, the Bike Friday, that travels on, you know, in an airplane. And when you get where you're going, you can ride. So I'm prepared for whatever comes up to keep the streak going. That's how I managed to do it. That's the only way I think you can do it with a bike.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce you. We're speaking with Jim Langley. And if you don't know him, I'm kind of surprised. I mean, he has been with Bicycling. He is a contributing editor to Road Bike Rider. He's their tech editor. I've known him for a long time. I think anybody who's been in our sport for a long time, if you don't know him, you know his name. We're kind of talking about this 10,000 consecutive days of riding, but there's a lot more to talk about. So the first thing before we move on is, do you have another goal that you want to achieve?
Well, this is a good question. I've been thinking about that. You know, it was May 16th, Sunday, that I knocked off the 10,000 days, and I've been looking forward to doing that for a long time. It seemed like forever that was taking to get here. And I, right now, the only goal I have is to recover a little bit, keep riding. But this week, I've been riding pretty easy, and I've been thinking about what the next goal should be. I always set goals, but I haven't thought of one yet. So if anybody in the audience has any suggestions, you can let me know. I would like to ride up Mount Diablo faster than I have before. That's a really tough climb out here, about 2 hours away from me. I've never ridden up that mountain and not died halfway up the mountain. So that's a goal, a riding goal that I've been thinking about.
Well, if you haven't died, then I imagine everybody else will die. I mean, come on. Those are crazy goals, but I like them. I like them. You're not getting younger, are you? Maybe you are.
No, I would. That's another goal I have, is to be as fit as I am now when I am 70. So that's 2 years away. So if I could keep it going for another 2 years, that would be great.
I think you're going to have no problem with that. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the other things that you do, like the work you do for RBR, Road Bike Rider. And, you know, I've been a subscriber to that email that we get every single Thursday. It's awesome. You wake up every morning, every Thursday morning, and there's your Road Bike Rider email. It's been through a couple of iterations in terms of owners, but you've always been kind of a constant there. Tell us about your work with Road Bike Rider. I think everybody might want to be interested in subscribing to it.
Yeah, it's a free newsletter, and we have columnists who write about health and fitness, about training, and about technology. We have several coaches that write about fitting yourself to a bike and dealing with different issues. And every Thursday it comes out, and all these columns are in there, and they're free to read. And I have a column that I've had for a long time called Jim's Tech Talk. And I can pretty much write about anything of a technical nature I want to write about. And, you know, cycling is super technical, and there's a lot of things to always coming up, new products, new bikes, new widgets to fix things, new tools. And that's what I cover. I've been a technical editor writing about cycling going back to the late 70s. And my first column actually was in California Bicyclist Magazine in 1983, and that was called Technicalities. So I was the first person to cover clipless pedals, the first person to cover aero bars. I go back to the beginning, almost.
And you're not really that old yet.
That's true.
You're not.
Nice of you to say that.
Well, you know, because I'm older than you, I can say that. Not by a lot, but yes, by enough. So, you know, In advance of our having a conversation today, I went over to your website. It is so interesting because in a way, it's got this vintage feel to it, and yet it's modern. So there aren't enough hours in the day. I don't know how you do all this stuff, but tell me a little bit about your website and how you sort of planned it and opened. I mean, it's just got so many cool little links to go through.
So the title of my website is Jim Langley, Bicycle Aficionado, and it took a lot of thought to come up with a name for the website. I wanted something a little quirky and a little funny, and I see myself as a cycling expert, sort of a know-it-all about cycling. Not that I know everything about everything, but I have such a broad range of knowledge from my experience. You know, I've collected bikes. I've ridden high wheel bikes in centuries. I've been a member of the Wheelmen for a long time. I was totally into recumbents for a long time. I've ridden across the country. I've raced cyclocross, triathlon, mountain bikes, road bikes. So I have a broad interest. So if you found a bike at the flea market, I could tell you what it's worth, how much you could sell it for, and how to sell it. You know, if you're trying to figure out how a bike from the 1960s, 70s, 80s, 90s, or 2000 works, I can help you fix it or work on it. So I've just been around a long time, and I actually, you know, really love bicycles. So I've just been passionate about it. My website reflects the passion, and I wanted to use vintage stuff because the vintage art and the vintage bikes are so beautiful, and they're just, I think they're great to look at. You don't see that stuff. I had the help of another guy who was an amazing graphic artist, and I would sit there with him and bring him these old ads from the 1880s, and he would scan them and embellish them because he was really good with his Macintosh computer and his software. He didn't know that much about bikes, but he was really excited to learn, and we would work together. And he helped me put the site together. I told him what to do. I steered the ship, but he made it all come to life. And
it's a wonderful
website. Over
200
pages. Well, thank you so much. I'm glad you like it.
It's got some really interesting things that I think my listeners will enjoy. We're going to take a real quick break. And when we come back, we're going to speak with Jim some more. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Jenks. We are speaking with Jim Langley. If you don't know him, mosey on over to jimlangley.net, and you will learn a lot about him right away. You know what? I want to talk a little bit about your vintage bike collection. I have a friend here in Northeast Ohio who also has a vintage bikes collection. Tell me a little bit about yours.
Well, mine can't compete with some of the collectors out there. There are amazing collectors. I've done stories about collectors and seen warehouses, 10,000 square feet warehouses full of bikes. I don't have anything like that. I have a few nice bikes over a range of years. I have one high wheel bike, which they also call an ordinary or a penny farthing,
right?
Which is probably my most magnificent bike because it's the bike. You know, it looks like a giant wheel, and anywhere you take that bike, you draw a crowd. I've ridden it in parades. I've raced it in criteriums. I rode two centuries on it. It's been to Scotland. It really is a magnificent bike.
Wait! You raced that bike?
Yeah, I've raced it, and I'm undefeated. I almost lost the race, but I had a better bike. You know, the high-wheel bike, the bigger the wheel is, the faster you can go. And
well,
my wheel
is
a 56-inch wheel.
That's hilarious if you don't fall off of it.
Well, yeah, you don't want to crash. That's why they went away. You know, for 10 years, they were the most popular bicycle in the world. And then somebody realized, boy, people are dying left and right here. We better come up with
because it's a
design.
Long way down there.
Oh, it's awful.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's the first lesson is don't fall off.
Right. You know, we'd say keep the rubber side down, but I guess with those bikes, it's don't fall off. You know what? I want to take a left turn. I know you work for Praxis and you're an engineer. I know you're not in the sales department, and I know you aren't necessarily 100% sure of what's going on in the industry, but what do you think about what's going on? We have a mini bike boom. We have a super lack of parts, and the supply chain is just awful. What do you think about the future of this, and how is Praxis doing?
Well, we're doing fine. We're doing fine because we bought a lot of stuff. We had inventory, and we're doing a good job at putting things together. If we can't sell a crank that's available, we will try to build a crank from the individual parts that make up the crank. That's a lot of what I do. I'll get orders, and then it's basically like a short order cook. I'm picking the chain rings and putting together to suit the order.
Oh, interesting.
You know, things are getting slim pickings just because of the nature of the way things are. And everybody is like that. You know, some of the biggest players in the industry, like Shimano, for example, is having trouble. So I think it's unfortunate that we can't get everybody who wants to ride out on the equipment they want to ride. But I love that so many people got excited about cycling and got back to riding bikes during the pandemic. And I love how a lot of communities made the roads a little better for cycling, things like pop-up bike lanes and safe streets, and slow streets, these incentives to help people get out and use the street for something besides driving. And there are a lot fewer drivers on the road too, which was a good thing. You know, things are going back to the way they were before. They have to.
Right.
But I'm hoping that there's some residual passion for cycling from everybody out there, and that we see more people riding. I mean, we have awful lot of interest in e-bikes for people that want to get rid of the car, or people that need some assistance getting up hills or fighting headwinds or just riding a bike in the first place. And that's been great for the industry, but even those are hard to come by. So I don't know. I hope we get through it, but most of the expert business people say it's going to be a challenge, and it doesn't sound like much of the industry is ready to ramp up production just yet. You know, they're not sure that this is a boom that's going to last. So, boy, I'm not a business person. I have always worked for other people. I've thought about opening a shop, but I've
oh
always
no, you
thought,
don't want to do that.
My feeling was I'd be too busy talking to people and making friends and not ready to charge what things are really worth.
That's a problem. That's a problem, I think, now.
Yeah, you have to take care of business first, or you will never make it, because the expenses of running a shop are through the roof. And they're wonderful places. I mean, I come from a bike shop background. I miss working in a shop. It's totally different working for a manufacturer. You're on the front lines, but in a totally different way. When you're in the shop, you're right there with the end user, you know, the cyclist, which is a great place to be, but it's not easy. That's for sure.
No, it's not. Let me once again reintroduce you. We're speaking with Jim Langley, and he just covers the gamut of what's going on with cycling, from his 10,000 consecutive days of riding to his amazing website, jimlangley.net, and the work he does with roadbikerider.com, which we'll talk about again at the end of our conversation. You mentioned the fact that you have become a YouTube phenom. So I have been shied away from video because I figure I have a really good face for radio, audio, podcast. Tell me about your YouTube channel and what you're doing with it. It seems to be very, very popular.
So right now, if I have the stats right, YouTube is either the number one or number two search engine in the whole world. And the number of videos that are put up every day from people around the world is in the billions, with a B. So it's a phenomenal media company right now. And I've always been in media. So I started off, even when I was working, well, by the first cycling job in California, I was already writing about cycling. So I'd work full-time in the bike shop, and I'd go home and I'd write articles about cycling. So I've been a journalist, old school typewriter, and then on a computer word processor. And so I did that, and I then had a website when the internet went crazy. So I did that. My website went up 20 years ago, and I had a blog, and I have a Facebook page and Twitter and all that stuff. But nothing's taken off like YouTube. It's just amazing. So in all my writing, I write about technical things. And at Bicycling Magazine, my most popular column was Repair Stand, which told people how to fix their own bike. And I would take something simple like how to replace a brake cable, and I would tell you how to do it. And that became a best-selling book, Bicycling Magazine's Complete Guide to Bicycle Maintenance and Repair, which I wrote. So they're very, very popular, teaching people how to fix things. So the next step was, well, let's really show them. So I kept getting this question, Jim, can I build my own wheel? And I would say, well, it's complicated. It's challenging, you know, but I could show you if you came over to my house. So or if we come to the bike shop. I used to do wheel building clinics at the bike shop. And we would sell rims and hubs and spokes, and we would teach people how to build wheels. So I thought, when people were asking to do it again, I thought, you know what I need to do is put this on YouTube. So that's my most popular video is how to build a bicycle wheel the easy way. And I basically show what I did in the clinic, how I taught people to build wheels, how I would teach a mechanic that came to work for a shop how to build wheels. And it's very basic the way I lay it out. Easy is only easy if you're interested. If you're not interested, it'll bore you to tears. You won't stick with it. You won't get through it. It's an hour-long video.
Yeah, but so I know how long it takes to build wheels, so that doesn't seem like a long time to actually teach something.
No, but the comments are really funny. People say, if it's so easy, how come it takes an hour?
People have no patience. They have no patience whatsoever. You know, my favorite comment used to be, what you need to do is give every amateur a spoke wrench, and then you'll never be out of the wheel business in your shop.
It's a $2 tool, or it used to be, that does $100 worth of damage
exactly,
in a couple of minutes.
Well, before we end, I'm going to have you give us a list of the things people can go look for when they're looking for you. So what do you think, and this is kind of my last question for the time being, what do you think is going to be the most important thing we can do to keep more people riding more often, which is what People for Bikes, it's what everybody wants to do, more people riding more often?
We have to fix the infrastructure. It's in most cities around the world, it's dangerous to ride a bike. It's even dangerous here in Santa Cruz, California, even though we work so hard on the bike committee and the Regional Transportation Commission to make it safe. If you could make the roads safer, if you go to Davis, California or Palo Alto, California, and all day long, thousands of cyclists are riding on those bike boulevards. And it's magnificent when you see it. It's like Amsterdam, but it's here in the USA. It shouldn't be considered okay to have so many deaths on American roads. We can fix it. I'm hoping that electric cars and electronic cars make the roads safer at some point. You could see it happening, but it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
But that's what I think has to happen. I mean, anytime you put in a safer place, people come out and use it, and it makes the whole environment, the whole everything feels nicer. It's just more fun. It's more pleasant.
As always, this is a great conversation. We've been speaking with Jim Langley. If you are interested in what he's doing, tell us how to get to your YouTube channel, and then we'll talk about your website, which I think people need to just take a moment and browse that website, because it's so meaty.
Thanks. I'm glad you like it.
And I do.
To find me on YouTube, the simplest thing is to search on my name, Jim Langley, L-A-N-G-L-E-Y. And if I don't come up right away, you could type in bicycle, and then that'll bring me up right away. And the channel is new, but I'm putting up new videos as quickly as I can with the time that I have. So, and if you are interested in any me helping you out with anything cycling, you can just email me at jim@jimlangley.net. I'm happy to answer emails. I've been answering emails about cycling, you know, ever since I got into this sport and email existed.
Well, and so, you can also, if you're interested, subscribe to Road Bike Rider at roadbikerider.com. It comes out every Thursday. It's a free newsletter. It's filled with some interesting things. In the interest of full disclosure, Road Bike Rider and the Outspoken Cyclist used to actually partner a little bit, but they have a new owner now, and I don't know anything about him. And I think the newsletter looks great right now. I was just looking at it right before you and I had our conversation this week.
His name is Lars, and he's in Dallas, Texas. He's a roadie. He loves to ride his road bike and race his road bike. And if you want to find him, you can find him on Zwift. He goes by Lars Hungry, which I thought was really funny.
That is funny.
He's a nice guy. He's passionate about cycling. He's also passionate about gardening. So he actually has two pursuits that keep him very, very busy.
Wow. And those are not mutually exclusive. Well, Jim, thank you so much. I know you just got home from work, and I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me today. Once again, we've been speaking with Jim Langley. And if you don't know who he is, I'm telling you, go to jimlangley.net and you'll know all about him. Have a great evening, and I hope we get to talk again soon.
Thanks so much. I do too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
My thanks to Jim Langley and to Dr. Etienne Krug for joining me on the show this week. You can find out more about Jim and his work at jimlangley.net, and you can get all the information about the Global Safety Initiative at unroadsafetyweek.org. Next week, I'll be back with a brand new show, including a chat with Dave Snyder. He's the Executive Director of California Bicycling, or Cal Bike as it's better known, and he's got a lot to say. We also catch up with Ellie Sias, whose tour company, Cycle of Life Adventures, is on the road again with an epic 33-day tour down the mighty Mississippi. So my thanks to you for listening. Please remember to check out our Facebook page and perhaps join one of the conversations that are going on each day. You can comment on this or any other episode of The Outspoken Cyclist at outspokencyclist.com. I hope you have a great week. Stay safe, stay well, and remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show, and we welcome your thoughts and comments. We'll be back next week with new guests, topics, conversations, and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and most other podcast apps, and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.